What's going on, everybody? Spring is in the air. Yes, we have a bit of a break with the UFC fights, but you know what? Three cards with absolutely stacked cards. I mean, I think this is a perfect situation of quality over quantity. I can't wait to get into this month's UFC Prospect Watch. I think April is going to be the best month we've had so far. You know, if you haven't already, like, subscribe, hit that bell. You know, we're doing some great things over here. Go ahead and, you know, hit up Jeremy Brand and MMA Sucka. Last Word on Sports, we're putting this all together, you know, collectively. And it's looking real good for this month. You know, last month, let's quickly touch on Sean Brady. We ranked him at number one. And, you know, I think we did a great job with that. He looked the part. We talked about his timing. We talked about the wrestling and how good his striking was getting. But, you know, he looked dominant. And I think that we ranked him, you know, rightfully so at number one, and let's hope to have the same success going into this month. You know, Jeremy once again providing another absolutely fantastic list of prospects. I mean, you're not going to hear me stop saying how excited I am to watch some of these young fighters, you know, get into that octagon, because we actually had this list done a few days ago, but then, you know, between the fight cancellations, and then we also have some of these big prospect signings in the UFC. This is absolutely massive for fight fans, especially if you pay attention to the LFAs and the Braves and the CFFCs and Cage Warriors, because there's just prospects coming up from absolutely everywhere. So if you haven't already, hit that bell, hit that subscribe, you know, throw a like on the video. Go ahead and do the same thing over at MMA Sucka, Last Round Sports. You know, we're just a happy community here in MMA. Just, we're trying to have some fun with it. So let's get right into it, right? Nate Maness, that was the guy that we were actually going to rank about six or seven. Unfortunately, we're going to throw him in the honorable mention section, if you will. He did pull out of his fight. He had Ray Borg pull out of his fight. So I thought that was going to be a fantastic fight to see him in. Johnny Munoz Jr., who we're definitely going to be touching on in a little bit here. He looked the part, right? I was very, very, very happy to see, you know, how well he was able to, you know, work the clinch, get up against the fence. He was able to switch positions very quickly. He basically won that first round, lost second. If it wasn't for those points, man, that was a very close fight, especially on short notice. So, like, we'll talk about that in more detail soon. But, you know, let's get more into Nate Maness just quickly. You know, he beat Luke Sanders in a very dominant fashion. 13-1 record against good competition looks absolutely pristine. So, you know, when we do get to see him, hopefully we get to talk about it again. But at this point, we're just going to throw him in the honorable mention and get right on with it, because, you know, there's just some fun guys to chat about here. You know, Zhu Rong is going to come in here at number 10. And, you know, the only real reason is lack of competition, but, you know, pristine 17-3 record. A lot of his fights are coming in the same organization, the WLF out in China. I believe that stands for the Win Lin Fang, the Wu Lin Fang MMA promotion. And, you know, he actually was dominant. So he's only ever lost by submission, three fights. The last loss was actually in 2018, and he's been on a 9-fight winning streak ever since. He's been a main card headliner over there. In the last fight, he actually captured their lightweight title, which is now probably the reason he's now going to get a chance at the UFC here, because he looks like he was doing numbers for them over there. That's where I kind of, you know, in looking at his highlight reel, definitely one of those fighters that likes to move front and back. Great head movement, but not a lot of lateral movement for a guy who enjoys striking so much. The one thing I do like, though, is he kind of uses the reset to avoid strikes. So he sees punches and kicks very well. It kind of backs out of the way, doesn't really circle and throw back or anything like that. And I mean, developing game, I'm sure. And that's going to be something he's going to have to learn, especially at this level. But the front and back movement seems to really work well for him. And again, powerful strikes, kicks, and hands. He really throws hands more than kicks from what I've seen, but he's got some power. And like I said, only ever lost by submission. So that's something to really take in, because he's definitely a headhunter. He's looking for knockouts. And the big thing is he's taking on a guy like Rodrigo Vargas, if you remember him. He actually beat, he lost to Brock Weaver via illegal knee early last year. And so we haven't seen him since then. And, you know, I think that's going to be an absolute stand-up war. We got a really good kickboxer in Vargas who's going to be throwing a lot of kicks, especially to the head. You know, good leg kicks coming in from the Asian as well. But I think that, you know, when you look at some of the competition that he's faced, it's not going to be as you know, clean cut as what we've seen from the Mexican side. You know, it's just an overall ranking situation where we're not going to see a lot of guys get pulled out of these, you know, WLF federations in China. But you know, this guy looks like the real deal, at least from a striking perspective. I think the ground game and the jiu-jitsu is probably going to be a work in progress when it's at this level. But outside of that, man, you know, ranking him at number 10, you know, with both guys having really good timing on the strikes and being able to see the strikes really weigh and counter back, like, this is a very, very, very exciting fight. You know, it looks like it's going to be a great kickboxing battle. And they're going to fight on April 24th at UFC 261, which is basically the last part of the month. I think that's going to be hella exciting. Dude's 9-0 since 2018. So, you know, competition or not, the guy's definitely been winning and handily, like I said, lightweight champion out in China. So I'm excited to see that fight. I think it's going to be an absolute blast. So let's get right into number 9, right? Shamil Gamatsatov. So that was a guy that we absolutely loved, right? That highlight reel heading into his UFC career is just absolutely ridiculous. Spinning elbow finishes, a lot of great striking. I mean, he reminded me of Magomed Ankalaev, which is kind of funny because I feel like they're pretty close too, because Kilsen Abreu basically fought both of them and obviously lost, but yeesh. Can you imagine taking on both of these guys in the UFC? So, I mean, hands down, you know, kudos to you for even taking those two fights. Absolute monsters and, you know, had a great showing, right? It was really interesting in watching the Abreu fight. You kind of heard them talk about how, you know, Gamatsatov has a brown belt. Jiu-Jitsu was just kind of interesting for, you know, the Dagestani wrestlers and that kind of background who pride themselves primarily on, you know, the Sambo, the wrestling, and really bringing in the boxing to help them kind of ride with their MMA game. But, you know, I think that he was able to showcase a lot of his skill. I thought the leg kicks were probably the best thing he was throwing. I think he could be a little bit, you know, looser with the hands. Maybe he was nervous when it came to the UFC because, like I said, the highlight reel prior to that was absolutely gorgeous. 14-0 fighter. So cardio looked great. That was another thing, you know, when you think about a guy who's got to kind of push the pace and keep it going. When he fights kind of technically like that, he really is kind of trying to headhunt it with a lot of the more precision and accurate style punches and kind of use those leg kicks and body kicks to set them up. But outside of that, I actually wanted to see some more of that wrestling. It didn't really work out that way. And I think keeping the fight off of the ground in the third round is kind of the main reason he won that split decision. So, you know, kudos to him for always finding a way to win. And I think that's going to help him when he starts to climb these ranks in the UFC. But, you know, when you think about what he has in store, I just think that that's going to be someone we have to keep looking at because we haven't seen him fight the best of competition. And I think that's where, you know, when it comes to UFC, we've seen so many of these guys who make a mark, but then really just kind of fall off because they don't really have that opportunity. But when you look at it, 4 straight canceled bouts, 2 against Ovince St. Preux, 1 against Devin Clark, and then now 1 against Dalton Jones. We had him ranked at number 1. That's where we kind of had to drop him down to number 9. So when you think about just like our over analysis, everybody kind of just shifted up in a way and he's now at number 9. But I kind of like that anyway. We didn't want to put him in the honorable mention because frankly, from a number 1 who isn't fighting because of visa issues as opposed to an injury or pulling out for any reason that he might have had to, you know, put forward to the commission. But I think that's where we absolutely love this guy. He's a gamer. He looks the part. And I think that, you know, when we get to see him in the UFC again after, you know, his experience, you know, almost what, 2 years ago, I think that's going to be a very fun fight. And if it's Dalton Jung again, or even a guy like Ovince St. Preux, I think it's going to be an absolutely amazing challenge in just his second fight. So I think, you know, we at least had to keep him on the rankings just for that. And now we get to talk of my boy, Johnny Munoz Jr. That 10-1 record is actually, it's great to look at because when you look at how he took that maintenance fight, I mean, complete underdog, right? Short notice. He looked the part, man. He gave Manus an absolute, you know, run for his money. When you think about how that fight was supposed to go, and even Manus's reaction to the win, like he was very excited about that. And I don't think he acted like, you know, from the heart, someone that actually knew he won that fight right away. Like that was excitement there. Oh my God, on edge, boom. Yes, it was me. So I think that's something to keep in mind. I think from an overall perspective, like, you think about how much of a good fight he put up on short notice, then Manus going over and just knocking out Lute Sanders the way he did. I think that really kind of, you know, puts Johnny Munoz on the map because for me, he put up such a good fight. If it wasn't for the low blows and if it really wasn't for just kind of those situations where he wasn't able to kind of push that pace on him to keep him up against the fence. I mean, he was reversing in those clinch situations right till the end of the third round. So like cardio looked fine. I mean, the second round was just the main question. And then again, you know, the points taken away via low blows, it was probably his take written. But again, that's a perfectly good first loss to take because I think that sets him up for an absolutely amazing, you know, second fight, UFC career, whatever you want to call it. I also think this guy might be the one that shoots up this list, right? I think when you look at the performance that he had, you know, we really can expect a lot from this guy. And I don't want to hype him up too much. And, you know, putting him at number 8, I think, you know, keeps us in reality a little bit. But at the same time, I'm really excited to see what he can do against a guy like Jamie Simmons on April 24th, UFC 261, because I think whatever he's putting in, he's the kind of guy that's taking it out, man. That was a very fun and interesting fight to watch. And I thought that when you look at the overall perspective of just his wrestling, you know, the pace was amazing. He wasn't the one kind of losing out on that, despite being the short notice fighter. You know, that's what had me so excited to see him fight a second time, because I couldn't believe that he was keeping such a pace and finding ways to reverse in the right situations and getting good strikes off. I mean, it was an absolutely beautiful fight. When you look back prior to that, you know, King of the Cage, that's where he came from. It's going to be a fun fight. Look for that last card of the month, 24th. This kid's going to be someone to watch, win or lose. I think it's going to be an incredibly fun fight. All right. So this is a crazy one, because not only talking about, you know, Alex Kizriev, we're going to actually talk about his opponent a little later as well. Crazy matchup. Let's just get right into him, right? Kizriev, 13-0 fighter, coming in at number 7 on our list. Great wrestler. And the thing I want to talk about more is the power in his strikes, especially early in the round. I just remember in his last fight, he just lands a big body, taking a big punch. And like, you hear these land. You know, like, this is the Dana White Contender Series, so small octagon, big sound, all that stuff, just tsh, tsh. You know, you can't not feel that yourself a little bit. And I think the biggest part that I was, you know, mostly impressed with is a huge win over Mr. Steal Your Limbs, Rusamir Paul Harris. You know, I'm pretty happy to see that. You know, I think most people who know Paul Harris's record are going to be like, yeah, anytime he takes a loss, you know, slap on the wrist, pun intended. You know, that's the kind of way I want to take that. But I think when you look at his record outside the UFC, you know, this is a kid that, it's a scary fight, right? Like, this is nobody that you want to play around with. I think that when you look at the cardio in that fight, it was absolutely phenomenal. And the willingness to grind, right? We've seen him finish in the first round and just go to the third round in another fight. I think that's phenomenal. You know, it's just like all these Russian fighters, right, that are coming with that really good pedigree of wrestling and some power in their hands. It's really dictating the future of the sport. And I think that when you look at the opponent in Kyle Daukaus on April 10th, I mean, for me, it's just such a, this is a main event fight. If you think about how good these guys can be and who they might end up being in the next year or two, it's so exciting for me to watch it. And this is probably one of the fights that really kind of made this month and this kind of ranking so exciting for me to do, because I get to talk about both these guys on the same ranking here. And, you know, depending on who wins, we're either going to look really smart or really dumb. But for now, we're putting Kizriev at number 7, you know, overall history. They know a Contender Series showing was great. But again, I still feel like that's kind of like G League NBA stuff, right? Like, you're going to look the part on there if you really are, you know, coming in with your head held high, A game, you know, all that stuff is on point. But then you start getting into the ocean with the sharks, and kind of everybody's doing that, right? It's just all about chess games and who's making the mistake first and all that stuff, which is a completely different ballgame. You don't get to look as good that quickly in that arena. So I think that's where we have to still keep him at number 7. We're hoping that, you know, all of that experience makes this a really fun fight, but you know, Kyle Daukaus is gonna be a fun guy to talk about in a little bit here, so stay tuned for that. Again, right, number 6 is gonna be fighting one of the fighters pretty high on our list, if you know, maybe number 1. But at number 6, Juan Espino. Is there someone that is more exciting to watch at 40 years old? We're watching all these other fighters at 37 plus or so kind of lose that, you know, next gear that they all had, and finding new ways to kind of tailor make their fighting stuff. And like, Wonder Boy is one of the best, because his fighting style is just so bred for anyone who can move, you know, that long of their life that quickly. You know, it's just not a lot of exertion on his part, but oof, is it fun to watch. In this case, you know, Espino had an amazing UFC debut. We saw him with that scarf submission. It was absolutely beautiful. I mean, when you think about his overall career, 40 years old, fighting out of American Top Team, won the Ultimate Fighter, and the story leading into the Ultimate Fighter is absolutely phenomenal. It's my favorite part of just looking into him in such detail, but he basically goes 2-0 in like 2011, just goes absolutely crazy. Then he ends up fighting Vitaly Minnikov, who is a Bellator veteran, 22-1, his only losses to Chet Congo in Bellator, and I mean, gets rocked in under 10 seconds. So 2-1 fighter, basically says, wow, I just got knocked out in under 10 seconds. I want nothing to do with this right now. 6 years, bye. Peace, says peace to the sport. You know, does his own thing for a while. All of a sudden, comes back, goes 6-0, and gets a chance on the Ultimate Fighter, and wins the Ultimate Fighter in 2018. So now he hasn't even lost since then. I mean, the Scarpel joke that we just talked about against, I believe his name was Jeff Hughes. Yeah, he fought Jeff Hughes. And I just, you know, that was a dominant fight, right? I think he got him up against the fence very, very quickly. By that point, it was just working in so much technical skill and grappling. I think the strikes, he was able to use them when he needed to, but it was very obvious that he was just trying to work in and get closer and try to finish on the ground. It was really, really impressive to watch a 40-year-old guy go on this kind of trajectory and finish in that fashion in the UFC. It's just like, I don't think I'm more excited about any other 40-year-old in the UFC anymore. But, you know, when you think about everything that he's brought to the table in that time, it's like 35 to 40, this guy's living a life that, you know, half of us could only dream of. And I think that that plays a part, you know, just overall. Like, he looks good for his age. The health factor is all there. He looks like a true heavyweight. So in terms of just overall skill, it's all there. But, you know, now it's time to start really, really, you know, swimming with some real sharks like we're talking about here. And, you know, I'm really excited to get into his opponent, which is, you know, coming in pretty high on our list. But, you know, Alexander Romanov is probably one of the most impressive heavyweights, you know, in the UFC right now. It's coming after we've seen guys like Tom Aspinall and Chris Daukaus do their thing. So it's seeing such a huge resurgence in 2020, and that's what I'm most excited about when it comes to that division. But, you know, he's part of that process, and I think a fight against Alexander Romanov is going to dictate how well, you know, you're going to be able to deal with some of the top-ranked fighters in this division, because it's starting to look like, you know, some killers are making their way up here. And when you go back all the way, like, you know, 21 fight win streak, like, those are the things that we're talking, like, those are the guys he's losing to. For Vitaly to beat him in the way he did, that's the part that makes me really excited to see what he can do so late in his career, after taking 6 years to be like, no, I never want that to happen to me ever again for the rest of my life, so I'll just take a chance in starting my career going at like 35, 36 years old and never let that happen again. So if there's anyone that wants to start this fight, that start this sport a little bit later in their career and all that kind of fun stuff, I mean, this is the guy you want to model yourself after. So he's going to be fighting Romanov on April 17th. That's the Gastelum card. I'm just so pumped for the fights this month. It's going to be absolutely insane. I mean, that's number 6, Juan Espino. Another beautiful heavyweight to keep your eyes on. But let's get it to some of the female fighters. We knew it was coming. You don't know who yet. But up number 5, we're going to give it to the hometown, well, home training lady, and Lupita Godinez at 5-0. I mean, let's talk about how good she looked in her LFA championship fight, right? I always thought that Vanessa Demopoulos was getting a lot of good opportunity. You know, that was a fighter that people wanted to really see succeed. And we talked about two of the showings very quickly that she had, the Dynamic Contender Series against my girl, McKenna. What a fun striking battle that was. And to be honest, you know, it was a very similar outcome, I feel, for her in both fights when it comes to, you know, her losing her LFA belt and also losing that opportunity on the Dana White Contender Series. Good on her. She's actually come back with a first round knockout of her own in her most recent LFA fight. So we'll keep an eye on her as she starts to climb those ranks in LFA again to get her belt back. But Lupita's only 27 years old. And frankly, this is the best prospect from a female perspective that we have coming out of Canada. You know, I rave about the Charles Rodez and all that, but from a female perspective, this is the best prospect we've got. And her 5-0 might not dictate it, but the moment she beat Demopoulos, I think she landed on a lot of people's radar. It's that striking, right? She got, like, unfortunately, Vanessa got lit up. Like, when you look at the combos that she was throwing, my favorite part was the jab. You know, I felt like that she wasn't even just using the jab lazily. It was like even double pumping the jab to set up combos. So it's like you saw her throw the jab, then again, and then come back with two heavy lefts. So it's like her jab is not only landing with good power, but then she uses it to follow it up with like two or three more strikes. So it's really setting up for like 2 to 3, 4 punch combos, which is making her look so deadly on the feet. And I think that, you know, when you look at the head movement and things like that, you know, it's what made her just look so, so shockingly good when it came to that title fight. You know, it ended up going the distance, and a lot of people thought it was going to finish before that. You know, she just looked that good. But, you know, endurance is a lovely thing from both ends. And unfortunately, if you can't finish early, but you're going hard, you're probably just going to have to go hard for the next 3 rounds and just take that decision. But she looked fantastic. I think that the best part about it is, when you look at who she's getting now in the UFC, it's like no one's getting any easy shots in the UFC anymore. Like, if you're stepping in on short notice, especially as a prospect, chances are you're taking on someone that's pretty well versed in the MMA world. And right now we're talking about a girl like Jessica Penny, right? Absolute legend of the sport, UFC Invicta veteran. She's done it all. I think when you really analyze the fact that she's 5-0 with that Demopolis win for title, I think that she has that really, really lucky chance of being someone that gets to go 6-0 with two massive wins like that. That's a huge opportunity for her, because if she gets a short notice win over Jessica Penne, I think that's your biggest hope, right? In two fights, you win an LFA title and then beat, you know, one of the biggest veterans the sport has seen when it comes to just like long-term female fighters. It's insane. I think that's like the best thing you could possibly hope for. So, you know, all the power to her. Jessica Penne's no rollover. So that's going to be an incredible fight as well. If the striking comes into play, you know, she's obviously going to be looking to take advantage of that, right? Like I said, that double pump jab just looks devastating, right? She's getting Vanessa Demopoulos on her back foot and then landing with the next 1-2s from the left. So I just think she's just so fun to watch. You know, all the power to her, Canadian. You know, we really want her to kind of succeed from that light. But all in all, right? You can't expect anything more from some of these up and coming strikers in the female weight classes, because frankly, they're just, if people thought they were sloppy and hard to watch before, they are most certainly not anymore, because frankly, these are looking like Valentina Shevchenko's that could, with the right training and all that kind of stuff, get to a level where we start to see a really, really, really great crop of fighters. Because let's be real, for the next four rankings that we're going to get into, now that we finished the bottom five, we're going to be talking about some great female battles and some great female fighters that are going to have some good drama leading into their UFC careers, you know? So let's get right into that one, right? So at number four, we got another girl coming in. You know what? I'm just going to kind of forewarn you, but we got a couple girls coming in here, actually. But Erin Blanchfield, right? We had to add her to the list. How could we not? And we're not going to put her in the bottom five. She has to go into that top four. We think that when, you know, from that Tracy Cortez loss, which is something we're going to touch on in a little bit here too, it kind of seems to be a grappler's decision, or you know, which way do you want to go? Because that first round with her just locking up that arm bar, well, trying to lock up that arm bar for so long, it's like, is that offensive? Is that a, like, it's just such a, it's subjective. Like, I just don't think that you're going to have, you know, the each side really feeling that they got what they want out of it, because the judges themselves might be biased to one side or another. So we kind of saw it in the scoring. A lot of people felt like it could have gone either way. Me personally, I think that the way Tracy Cortez fights, it makes her look like the winning fighter. So even when I'm saying that she was in an arm bar, you know, she was defending it. She was in top position. And a lot of that, you know, to me, even if that was the lost round, when you look at the way she did the third round, I think the footwork and the wrestling, like, these are things that she uses to her advantage very well. And I think those are the things when you keep the fight standing, because you're defending takedowns. And when you're landing strikes at will and moving around and not getting hit very much, I think that's what really sells to the judges, especially now. And you're seeing that in a lot of these decisions where sometimes you think it should go a different way. So let's get more into Erin. I think that everyone seems more excited about her. I mean, when you think about everything you've seen over the last 72 hours from just Twitter and Instagram, it's kind of crazy, right? Like, this has to be one of the most exciting prospects we've seen. You know, the patties of the world are coming and going as usual, but, you know, the Blanchfields are someone you just hear about, right? Like, 21, 22 years old for what she's been accomplishing, right? You have to go back into her career. You realize she's 6-1 at that age. So a lot of these fights, she was literally a teenager. And I think that she was definitely on path to becoming, well, in getting that next Invicta title shot. But again, we're seeing this opportunity for a lot of female fighters in Invicta, where just as they're about to get into that cusp of, you know, fighting for a title, they get the call. We saw it happen to Miranda Maverick. Same thing's happening, I think, to Erin Blanchfield. You know, and good on them, right? I think that's what Invicta is trying to do, which is, you know, keep these fighters going. And they really are that feeder league for all the female fighters, which is great to see. And I'm really, really happy about, you know, the growth and just, like, let's call it a dime a dozen, because that's what we want, right? We want to be able to say that there is no argument. If you're someone that really does bash female MMA, I mean, unfortunately, I'm going to let you know firsthand that this is actually doing a lot better than you think. And if you're hanging on something that you felt maybe 5 years ago, maybe you need to give it another shot, because I'm actually quite excited about it and have been for a very long time. Shout out Holly Holm, Rose Namajunas, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, boom, boom, boom. Anyway, I digress. So I don't like the fact that she's had a couple canceled bouts, right? Like, this is a prospect that everyone's been looking forward to. The best thing about it is, you know, she's the kind of kid that's probably training her butt off in that time. Very young, jujitsu addict, right? That's her game, man. She looks really good doing it. What I was most happy about is everyone's always gonna, you can't always make people happy, right? So everyone's probably calling her a jujitsu fighter, then boom, lands this massive head kick finish, right? So now I'm actually thinking to myself, way to silence the critics, girl. Because when you want to really be that next level fighter, they're always going to criticize you. You're always going to get criticized for something. It happened to John Jones, right? Like, at the end of the day, John Jones's chin is one of the most amazing things you'll ever see, but we're so focused on all the other things he does. And when I talk about John Jones, for the record, it's always inside the octagon, outside the octagon, different guy, but the guy is a legend. And this is what we want to see, evolution. So, you know, you're talking about a 6-1 Aaron Branfield in her early 20s, starting to land head kick finishes, drops, like finishes. I think that's where you start to get real excited. And I think that's where you're starting to see, you know, your mainstream fans starting to pick up names like Erin Branchfield, because she's doing exactly what she should be doing and getting wins over fighters that you want to see her getting wins over. Tracy Cortez fight is the one blemish on her record, but let's just say if the UFC didn't have that rematch on its mind, you're absolutely crazy. Let's talk about her upcoming fight, right? We got Norma Dumont. I think that that's going to be a crazy tough fight. I don't think that people are going to give Dumont a lot of credit, but, you know, that fight's coming up on April 10th. That's actually pretty soon. She just kind of got the word and is in the middle of doctor appointments like crazy right as we speak today. So it's a long process. It's going to be a lot for this kid to take on. And when you look at Norma's recency, you know, the recency bias is so much in her favor. You have a loss against Megan Anderson, and then she just beat, you know, Ashley Evans-Smith, who's a pretty good, you know, in terms of veteran and overall skill. Like, she's a very tried, tested, and true type of veteran, and I think that is a very solid 1-1 to have when you think that Megan Anderson just fought for the title against Amanda Nunes. I can't wait. I think this is exactly what you want to see. We just talked about, you know, Lupita taking on a girl like Jessica Penne. Now we're talking about a girl like Erin Blanchfield taking on a Norma Dumont. You know, this is what we want to see. It's a passing of the torch. It's really seeing if these girls are at a level where can they take over for some of these veterans, or is there still a lot to learn? Because some of these veterans are the ones that people don't have such a huge, you know, appreciation for. But all of a sudden, we're starting to see some really, really good signs of finishers and technical strikers. So maybe it's going to bring out some of the veterans to, you know, look at Mary Renault. I thought Mary Renault did a fantastic job against Macy Chasen, but, you know, that fight was still 3 rounds and it was still a long fight. And Chasen's a really, really, really lengthy and good wrestler. And she brought it out in the 3rd round. So that's what I like to talk about when it comes to female fighters. I think it looks absolutely amazing what we're going to have on the docket come 2021 as a whole and in April. So let's get right into the top three, shall we? Tracy Cortez. Now, if you talk to Jeremy about it, you know, we had a lot of discussion about this 3, 4, and 5 and who we want to rank number one since we lost Jamil to the, you know, lower ranks because of the visa issues. Tracy Cortez, man, I think she could be a pound for pound number one. There's an argument here, right? If everyone's talking about Erin Branchfield, and there is, I mean, on record, a victory, and also a good enough side of people that believe she won the fight. So if that's the biggest female prospect coming into the UFC, Tracy Cortez deserves a lot of credit, right? Let's talk about the things I absolutely love. I'm all about defense when it comes to this shit. If you really love boxing and you really love all this shit, you gotta love the art of not getting hit as much as you love the art of getting hit. That's my 2 cents. And Tracy Cortez does a really good job of that. She has an 85% takedown defense and 62% striking defense. And I think that's actually very, very, very good. I think that actually shows you signs of a fighter who's able to get out of danger and definitely be able to put in her own game plan. We saw it against fighters like, you know, Erin Blanchfield. I mean, that was a fight where she definitely could have been dealing with all this type of, you know, adversity when it comes to the ground game and got sloppy and things like that. But no, she kept moving. She kept landing strikes. She uses her wrestling to avoid getting taken down and is a good enough striker to have confidence in her hands. That's what I really, really, really like about her. And when you think about where she comes from, right? If you know me and my love for MMA, it comes with a huge little thing for Henry Cejudo. Cringe, whatever you want to call it. I think Aljamain Sterling sold that title a long time ago, and I think it's starting to come to light from a very mainstream perspective. But Henderson, who does an absolute G, and his fight ready team are an absolute G of men. Like, it's just an absolute crazy team. And I think that we're seeing it with fighters like Tracy Cortez. The way she's able to execute her gameplay, the way she's able to keep her cardio going all three rounds, the way she's able to stand a danger at will and kind of just do her thing. It's the most fun to watch. I think that that's what makes her very dangerous going into any fight. And when you think about getting a kickboxer in her next fight, Justine Kish, absolute veteran, you know, tried, tested, and true type of striker, coming in on April 17th. I think that she's someone that, you know, is that a fight that's very winnable for her? I think so. I think that if she starts to even consider using her wrestling to get top position a lot, she might be able to just ride this game out to the decision. You know, if you want to get into a striking battle with Justine Kish, good luck. That's really on you. But at the same time, if that wrestling pedigree is what it is, and it looks like it is, it could be a very long night for Justine Kish. And so that's why I want to put Tracy Cortez at number three, if not higher, and even give her that consideration of one of the top prospects to watch this month, because not only do I think that her fight is winnable, but I also think that when you look at everything she's done up to that fight, I mean, I want to go back to the Maria Agapova fight on Dataway Contender Series, right? She was ranked this high with an 8-fight win streak, and then Vanessa Mello, Stephanie Edgar. I mean, those are the last three wins. So I think she looks the part. I think that this sets up an absolutely amazing potential bout between Aaron Bynestel and Tracy Cortez, which a lot of diehard fans are very much looking forward to now that they know that Aaron's in the UFC. They can get on a couple good win streaks here. I don't think it's a fight that you need to waste on a prelim. You should definitely get this as either a prelim main event or even get it on a main card, because you can build this fight up. It's a phenomenal battle, because Aaron definitely wants that one back. It's her only loss, and I think that there's enough backing for her to say that she won that fight. And so if that can happen with both these girls riding immense win streaks, I mean, what more could we possibly want from even a main event? I think it's absolutely billable, and I can't wait to watch it. All right, guys. Right now, I think one and two are, I'm going to say, interchangeable because of what we've seen them do. Number two for me, number two in general, me and Jeremy, we came to a decision very amicably and said Kyle Daukaus at 10-1 is the number two fighter going into this month. It's only, here's the bread and butter of that. I love the Daukaus brothers in general. Chris Daukaus as a heavyweight, some of the best hands we've seen in a very long time. The speed that he throws, some of his combos, there's no looping punches with him. They're coming straight up the middle. He's able to throw some of those, you know, coming around hooks if he needs to, but the guy is not afraid to get in that pocket and start to dance with you. It's what makes him exciting. It's what makes him so damn dangerous, right? Like, that's what I absolutely love about him as a heavyweight, because some people think he's so undersized and stuff like that, but man, the way he punches, the way he boxes, like, he uses his length as much as he can to his advantage, and it makes him deadly. It makes him be able to see punches so well, and the way he lands, it's just, the accuracy is phenomenal. And from a heavyweight, what more do you want, right? Everybody's getting excited for that. So let's get into his younger brother, Kyle. I think that from a, you know, national pride perspective, these guys are the best to watch. I think that they conduct themselves in such a professional way. The last couple of fights that we've seen them have, you know, a lot of things kind of, you know, whether it goes their way or not, like, they're just so game for everything. And it's just really great to see when some of these up-and-comers are just down to have a good time and just get in there and throw. And when you look at what Kyle Daukaus has done, like, I'm going to break down his record a little bit, because he's a 10-1 fighter, and that one loss is to Brendan Allen. Now, that Brendan Allen loss, take this in. This is a short-notice fight that Kyle Daukaus took. And Brendan Allen is, you know, at the time starting to really approach that rank level competition, because his supposed opponent was Ian Heineck, who just fought Kelvin Gastelum. So put that in perspective where Ian Heineck was in his career, where he didn't even take that fight with Brendan Allen. Kyle Daukaus took the fight and lost via really, really good decision. Like, beautiful fight. Everything you expect from Kyle Daukaus, an absolutely great wrestler and improving striker. Just looks so fun to watch. But just to paint that picture of where Kyle Daukaus went with that Brendan Allen fight, who Ian Heineck was going into now a Kelvin Gastelum fight without even, you know, taking in any type of victory there. So that's where Kyle Daukaus started his UFC career at 9-0, and then basically took his 9-1 loss. Like, he's a 1-1 UFC fighter against Dustin Stolfus, who was actually really, really good going into that fight. And, you know, Kyle Daukaus is like hella fun to watch. He's technical. He's a grinder. He brings some of that old school, like, fiery mentality. It's just, he doesn't seem outspoken, but he's just, when he's in there, like, he lets the fighting do the talking. And it's just so fun to watch, man. And it's credible, right? Like, this is the number one stat that I want to throw at you guys. Kyle Daukaus' opponents right now, he's a 1-1 fighter with an upcoming fight, obviously. His combined opponent record going into his fight is 40-4. These are the guys in three fights in the UFC at just 9-0 that he was willing to take on. So 9-0, loses to Brendan Allen, and then gets a win against our boy over here, Dustin Stolfus. So take that in. He's got three fights, 40-4 record, and it's basically Brendan Allen's the loss via decision, goes and gets a beautiful win against Dustin Stolfus, and now has to go and take on a guy like Kizriev, who's 13-0 and looks absolutely beastly. I get to watch two southpaws go at it. I like Kyle Daukaus' length in this fight. I hope he uses it to his advantage and avoids taking a lot of damage here, because his wrestling and his defense is really good. 94% takedown defense. That should help him keep this fight competitive. A lot of people, I think, are going to be betting against him when it comes to a lot of that Russian. You know, everyone wants to bump those right guys right now. But, you know, Kyle Daukaus is such a good fighter. And I can't stress that enough, because if you analyze the way he fights, you have to go watch that Brendan Allen fight and understand that that's a short notice fight too. Like, it's incredible for that to be short notice, for it to be a debut against the guy who was supposed to fight, a guy who just fought Kelvin Gastelum. Like, that's who Ian Heineck was at that point. And I hate to keep repeating it, but I just really want to give Kyle Daukaus his dues at a 1-1 UFC fighter, 10-1 overall record. It's insane what this man is taking on in just his third fight when you really analyze that 40-4 record. But again, 94% takedown defense against the competition that he's seeing. Great heart. Like, you know, if that was a stat, he's a 5-star rating without question. So for me, I think that this fight, if it goes 3 rounds, expel Kyle Daukaus to really, really use those types of intangibles to take this fight home. Because if he's not getting hit with big, big shots, or he's not seeing any real disadvantages, you know, the Brendan Allen fight was a lot of cardio. It was a lot of different things that he can work on. And so that's where I think, like, coming in at number two, I'm very confident putting him there, and very interchangeably at number one or two, depending on how his fight goes. Because, to be honest, he's just a guy that I don't think he can make a lot of mistakes outside of those things where now he starts to fight elite fighters and he starts to see guys who can do a lot of different things at high levels. That's where you're going to start seeing guys who really have to start brushing up their game and getting elite at something. Because, you know, if you're not a guy who can cover up very well, well, you might want to avoid some of these big strikers who are going to punch you through a wall. Again, I can't beat this any harder than I already have. 13-0, another undefeated fighter. I mean, it's insane to watch what he's doing. But if he gets this win, man, I think that Kyle Daukaus deserves to be on a main card, potentially a pay-per-view. You know, we're going to see him on April 10th, so maybe we can get him on a pay-per-view, depending on how well he does in the future. Because win or lose, this guy's going to be an absolute dog in there, and that's what people love to see. All right, guys, you ready? At this point, number one should be crazy obvious, right? I really think it should be, but Alexander Romanov. And it's funny, going into this list, I mean, he was someone I might have even considered putting at number one, but till you really dig into his highlight reel and start to understand what he's accomplished, it's kind of crazy, right? Because even if you want to shit on the competition that he's been against, not UFC caliber, not LFA, not all these, you know, big organizations that we've come to be used to, it's insane how well he's doing against the competition regardless. He's fast. He's quick for heavyweight. The footwork, the way he moves into opportunistic positions when he's up against the fence or grappling on the ground, it's hard to keep up with. You're watching guys that really are struggling. They're either getting picked up 10 feet in the air and getting thrown to the ground, are just struggling to find ways to get their legs around his, because there's no room. He's just cutting them off from any type of momentum, type of movement to get out of those dangerous spots. And he just waits and picks his spots and starts to land crazy ground and pound. And if you're a guy that just wants to sit there and take punches, see lofty submissions, like, he's such a good finisher. He's seen a third round only once in his career. And, you know, I want to dive deep into that fight because, you know, Sultan Murtazaliyev is the person that he lost to. They have a amateur wrestling history going into this fight. So not only was there amazing history going into this, but now he's pushing him three rounds for the first time in how long, and the last time we've ever seen him do it. And it was a really, really great fight. I mean, I'm going to pull up some clips right here for you guys, but the way he's, you know, kind of dodging a lot of these dangerous moments, but he imposes his will come the third round, and some of the strikes he lands. And for me, it was the grappling. I just really enjoyed the way he was having his way with them. The way he started the fight, are you kidding me? Like, it's insane. Like, this man moves like he's trying to be a flyweight. It's phenomenal to watch, and the athleticism is there. And you have to ask yourself, you know, if he lost some weight, would it be better? Blah, blah, blah. But when you think about his UFC record already at 2-0, I mean, I wasn't so impressed with the Rock Martinez win because of just like the lead up and fairly short notice and all these kinds of things. I just think it was a very set up fight in that way. But when you look at the second win, you know, that forearm choke is like a finishing move for this man, because not only was it the second time he did it, but to do it to a guy like Marcos Rogério de Lima just completely puts him out against the mat with his forearm. Like, watching a grown man do that to another grown man, and both of them being heavyweights, there's something just very, very just overpowering and scary to me about that. You know, it's just murderous in a weird way, but it's just hella skillful. I mean, it's crazy how he locks it up. It's crazy how he's able to land it, you know, that easily against a UFC fighter of that caliber. So it wasn't luck the first time he did it. And, you know, like I said, the caliber of opponent here, even at that 13-0, is pretty solid. The only person that it's very questionable is our boy Yuri Gurbenko, who is now sitting at a 12-50 record. So other than Yuri at that 12-50, you know, I think the rest of them look pretty, pretty good. When you watch that fight, it was absolutely domination too, you know, just in the air, Cormier style, took him for a ride. Actually, I don't know if it's Cormier style. It might have almost been like, you know, WWE style, but the wrestling is really good. The footwork is beautiful, and he uses that grappling just to smother you. And as a heavyweight, it seems very exhausting to deal with him because his momentum and movement is just always seems to be in the right place. He seems to have energy to go for as long as possible. And even that third round against his boy, I just think that was an absolutely great showing to see that he could still do that, if you want to criticize him for some of those earlier fights where, you know, he was maybe looking like a little bit way past his, what you would call his colleagues, if you will. It might have been time for him to move on to graduate school, if you will. But rounding out that list, we talked about how he's fighting Juan Espino. I think that's a great, great test for the grappling side. His striking, I think, is going to be key here. If he's able to really let loose and be the quicker fighter, it's going to be a tough night, I think, for Juan Espino. But at the same time, you know, if this fight is in close quarters, you have to kind of see who's going to carry that momentum. I think Espino, the way he finished that Hughes fight, a lot of momentum was playing his way. But did Hughes look like he was using all of his tools to be able to truly, you know, reverse or transition or get out of those places? It looked like he was dominated in every area. I do not believe we're going to see that with Alex Romanov. I believe that he's shown more than capable of being able to just avoid any, you know, very terrible spots against the fence. Like, I've just noticed him always be in a very opportunistic position when he gets close to the fence, whether he's pushing you there or gets put there and switches it. It's just, he's always in a great position. So I'm excited to see that fight. When we think about two fights that are basically on this ranking, I mean, it puts us in a little bit of hot water, but not only do we have those two fights, you know, between Kyle Daukaus and Kizriev, but we also have the Romanov and Espino fight. But then we also have all of this, like, really cool intertwining, you know, female history between Blanchfield and Cortez, and, you know, Lupita making her way up here with that beautiful striking win over Demopoulos. Like, it's such a crazy, crazy crop of, you know, people to watch out for. And then we got these dark horses like Johnny Munoz and Zhu Rong, and Unfortunately, we'll get to watch Shamil fight this month, but you know, I'm really excited to the way it's kind of looking. Like, you got the bona fide guys who may be able to jump between each other, and then some of these dark horses that could really make a mark. So between these three cards, like we said, you know, quality over quantity so far. I love it. I'm so pumped for all these fights. I might be more pumped for the, you know, prelims and undercards at this point than I am for the main cards, because they're fire. All these guys are gonna be in action. So don't forget, hit like, subscribe, share it with anyone you think will like it. I hope you guys enjoyed it too. Don't forget to give a shout out to Jeremy and the people at LWS. Always a pleasure. Till next month, peace.